is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, June 22nd, 2020. Taylor Schwenk is producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut. I'm Buster Olney. I'm working from my home studio just north of New York City. And Taylor, I feel like I want to defer the baseball talk or the labor talk for just a little while longer. So I saw the pictures you were tweeting out on Sunday, Father's Day, making some lobster.
Yeah, man. I, as a newly minted New Englander up here, I thought I'd try my hand at making a lobster. Normally I'm a crab guy being from Maryland, but you know, the sea bug up here ain't too bad either. So I picked up one from the grocery store. And it was funny when I'm with my wife, we're getting the lobster. It's alive, of course, because that's how they dole them out here. And my wife was like, what happens if it crawls out of the bag? And the woman behind the counter was like, oh, here you go. And had some plastic tied off the top of the bag so that lobster wasn't going anywhere. It turned out great. Just boiled it up and had some scallops, too. So it was a nice Sunday evening dinner. My wife watched on in horror with what I was doing to this animal on our table, even though she eats steaks, burgers, chicken, all that. She just something was up with her watching me actually kill something in our kitchen.
Yeah, we'll save the animal rights talk for another day. Yeah. But I was going to ask you, how did it taste?
Oh, it was good. I think I overcooked it slightly, but I just wanted to be sure that it was done. It was my first time doing it, but it was very good. And I killed the scallops. I threw them in the cast iron with some butter and some salt and pepper. Very easy to make, and it was all quite delicious.
It's funny you mention that, because there's no question that when, you know, our family looks back at the coronavirus and the lockdown, you know, and the question of, okay, what changed during that time? They're going to say, Dad became a cook. Like, I've literally just started cooking all the time. I love to cook now. I've never really cooked before, and I'm cooking a lot to the point that, I'm not kidding here, this morning, a new block of knives was ordered and a whole new set of pots. Because I'm looking now that I'm like doing this every day, and I'm like, you know what? That's not a great pot. You know what? That affected the way I made this dish. So I'm supposed to get that by the end of the week, and I'm kind of excited about that because we don't have any baseball to watch.
That's awesome. What dish have you made that's gotten the best review from the family?
Oh, my scrambled eggs are awesome, dude.
Okay. Yeah. What do you throw in there? What's your technique?
Well, I'll just say this. I watched an interview that Gordon Ramsay did, mm-hmm. and I absolutely went to town on that. Rewatched it like four times, made sure that I was following what he was doing. And all I'm just going to tell you is that my scrambled eggs are awesome. But okay. We probably should get to this baseball talk,
I guess.
And before we get to the coverage of the negotiations, Nelson Cruz was honored at the ESPYs last night, winning the Muhammad Ali Humanitarian Award. Here's what it sounded like on the show last night.
Nelson, we want to be the first to congratulate you on being the winner of the 2020 Muhammad Ali Sports Humanitarian Award.
That definitely will help a lot of people. So, from the bottom of my heart, my family, my foundation, and my hometown, thank you.
Former Chicago Cubs All-Star shortstop Addison Russell will look to rebuild his career abroad after he signed a one-year, $530,000 contract with the Heroes of the Korean Baseball Organization. Reportedly, that team wanted to sign Yasiel Puig, but he turned down their offer. Now, about the situation with baseball in 2020. On Friday, after a rash of positive tests in the camps around baseball, Major League Baseball announced that all camps are closed for coronavirus cleaning under MLB's proposal, remember. Teams would begin training a week from today. Jeff Passan reports that Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred sent a letter to the Player Association Executive Director Tony Clark today. This was on Sunday, offering to cancel expanded playoffs and a universal DH for 2021 if a full season isn't played in 2020. Players are concerned about giving up the leverage of agreeing to the playoffs and DH and then not having a season this year. So that'll be something that'll be haggled over again if they don't actually get to play. The players talked over the weekend about the owner's 60-game proposal, and the players will likely reject the proposal. Here's Jesse Rogers.
Today, Rob Manfred threw the players a little bit of a bone, so to speak, at least the league thinks so, in saying they don't have to adhere to next year's rule changes if this season is canceled. It delayed the vote a little bit, but I don't think it moved the meter much, Scott. There's still not a lot of optimism regarding the league's 60-game proposal. The players are likely to vote on that tomorrow.
Now, before we get to Sarah Langs and to Carl Ravitch, we need to mention our sponsor, Marathon Oil. Now more than ever, we have to look out for each other and count on each other. Marathon wants you to know that you can count on them for the high-quality, top-tier gas. Marathon gasolines are formulated with STP additives. They keep your vehicle running at peak performance by optimizing fuel economy, removing those ugly deposit buildups, and by reducing emissions. And right now, you can get 5 cents off every gallon, every day, with Make It Count rewards from Marathon. Plus, you can earn points for additional savings on fuel, airfare, hotels, and more. This is definitely a deal you can count on. It's quick and easy to join. Just download the free Make It Count app or go to makeitcount.com/radio and start saving today. The offer is valid only at participating Marathon stations.
Numbers game.
Sarah Langs, a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, today we're going for full distraction, okay? I mean, you know, we're all sick of the conversation about the negotiations, the back and forth, full pro rata, and we're really getting kind of sick of talking about all these infections, which may take down baseball. So for full distraction purposes, let's talk about some real baseball stuff. First off, the Hall of Fame chances for Yadier Molina. Would you vote yes or no if you had a vote?
Yeah. So this is a really fun one. And I love the full distraction, by the way. I mean, I always just want to talk baseball. So this is perfect for me. This is my day, right? Yadier Molina is a really interesting one for me because, you know, we talked about Buster Posey last week. And I see him in a sort of similar boat because, you know, there's a lot with the postseason success, obviously, that is to Yadi's name. And even, you know, less so than Buster, he hasn't won a major award. His highest MVP finish is third. His highest WAR in the season was 7.2 in 2012 when Posey actually won the MVP with 7.6 WAR that year. And you don't need to win an award. I mean, I was telling you about my research on all of that last week, and I'm not sure I mentioned this part, but of the 110 Major League players in the Hall of Fame who retired in 1956 or later, which was the first year of the Cy Young, so all of our awards existed, 44 of them never won a Baseball Writers Association award. So there are guys, obviously, you do not have to, but it is certainly one of those check marks that we look for. And I just think the thing with Yadi comes down to very much like what we talked about with Posey, that, you know, a lot of it has to do with how he's seen in the game. You know, he's been seen as this absolute defensive threat for so long. I mean, going back to 2006 and, you know, early in his career and all of that, it was, you know, don't run on Yadi. But his actual numbers are not necessarily as outstanding. Offensively, really not so much. And, you know, his peak years of WAR, so that seven-year WAR, which I talked about last week with Buster Posey, is significantly lower than the guys who are typically in the Hall of Fame. And I think it comes down to, again, you know, you talk about reputation and staying power, something for Yadier Molina. He's seventh all-time in games caught. He will move past Tony Pena for sixth on that list with just four more games caught. But the list isn't all Hall of Famers. Like in the top six, you have Bob Boone, Jason Kendall, and Pena, who are all not in the Hall of Fame. So it's not just about that. I think that I sort of see him as maybe in that veterans committee sort of area as well. But I know that he, like Buster Posey, has definitely at times been considered the best catcher playing right now and, you know, of his generation. And that's obviously worth consideration.
I think that when his name hits the ballot, that a lot of the writers will have to think of his candidacy as being something that isn't necessarily quantifiable. And the comparison that I felt like is, you know, we hear about NFL shutdown cornerbacks, the cornerbacks who are so good, they're assigned one-on-one against elite wide receiver. And those cornerbacks are so good that the defensive coordinator can swing the safeties over to the other side of the field, you know, which is why you had that, what, Revis Island, they always call it,
yes,
for the former Jet safety. And I think that's kind of how we have to think of Molina, that when he was on the field, there were other parts of the game that were taken away in a way that didn't happen with other catchers, specifically the running game. I mean, that ended because of his presence on the field. And it was something that the Cardinals players, pitchers didn't even have to worry about.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a really good way to put it, that it isn't quantifiable. So it sort of depends on the electorate then, right? And who's voting and how they're looking at it. And honestly, I mean, given where he is in his career, by the time he's being voted on, we may have an electorate that's looking at certain numbers even more so than we see now. But I do think that his reputation, maybe I think even more so, at least his broader reputation beyond just those in the game, I think does outshine Posey's. And I think it's what you're talking about, you know, with that defense and with everyone knows the way that he kind of manages the game while he is behind the plate. And I think that that will help him a ton. And so, you know, we'll see. It's not a traditional candidacy, you know, but I think that he's definitely an outstanding player.
All right. Last Wednesday, I asked Paul Imbecides about players who really affected by this year's shutdown. And a guy who I, you know, thought of over the weekend was Justin Verlander. He's 37 years old now. He turns 38 next February. He's got 225 career wins, Sarah. And I really thought coming off of last year when he was so spectacular that, you know what, I think Justin's got a real shot to get 300. Man, this would be a big deal for him to lose all of this year. What's your sense of how that could affect his climb to 300?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've been looking at his Baseball Reference page for 3 or 4 years now, just kind of like with when is this guy going to break down? You know, we've seen him really, especially since he went to the Astros, you know, that sort of resurgence in his career. But he's always been so reliable. He's thrown so many innings in his career, and he's just always been there making 30 starts. I mean, he's made 30 starts in almost every single season of his career, except for in 2015 when he made 20. And he's thrown almost 3,000 regular season innings at this point. And it just feels like we're almost waiting for that other shoe to drop. But it is possible. I mean, I looked this up. There's 26 pitchers who've had at least 75 wins from their age 37 season onward. So as you said, that age 37 season is probably going to be, you know, he's not going to get a chance at a normal, you know, 15 type win season. But there are plenty of guys who won upwards of 100 games, even from that point forward. So it is doable. And it is the guys who we think of as either late bloomers or, you know, some of the knuckleballers or guys that were just incredibly durable. You know, you have your knuckleballers, you have Randy Johnson. That's sort of the guys on this list. And it's all good pitchers. And he certainly belongs there in terms of name. But I don't know. I just constantly look at this and wonder when he's not going to be able to make 30 starts in a normal season or whatever a normal amount would be in however many games we might get this year. I don't know. I don't want to not believe in him. We've seen him be so good over the course of his career, but I think it'll be an interesting one to see if he can actually get there. But as you know, I mean, we already know he's a Hall of Famer. We were talking about that earlier with Yachty, but every pitcher with 300 wins is in except for Roger Clemens. So certainly another ticket to punch on there.
Speaking of Roger Clemens, now we've been reminded over the last 5 weeks that deadlines are really important when it comes to resolution. And that's going to be the case with Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds. Their deadline for their Hall of Fame candidacy is coming up in the next 2 years. They have two more shots in the writer's ballot to get into the Hall. What's your sense if, in fact, those two guys will get in?
It just seems to me like they're not going to. I mean, their increases since the electorate was changed slightly, which was a couple years ago now, their increases each year have been very incremental. I mean, they basically each went up about 1 percentage point in terms of their voting on the most recent ballot when Clemens had 61.0% of the vote and Bonds had 60.7. They're one vote apart, which has been a thing for a while for some reason. We've certainly seen players increase that amount in their final ballot or final two ballots. I mean, Larry Walker was at 34.1% on his eighth ballot, 54.6 on his ninth, and then he got in. And that was one of the higher increases of guys to get in on their final ballots. But he didn't have all of the other things that we know with Bonds and Clemens working against him. He didn't have rumors, allegations, all of this conversation.
Mitchell report.
Exactly. And being viewed as this, if we put them in, we're putting the steroids guys in. You know, you didn't have your name anywhere. An incredibly different case. So, you know, that is not the only instance of someone increasing a lot in those final 2 years, but most of them, none of them had something like this hanging over them as well. So I just find it really hard to believe that those voters, minds are going to change in the course of 2 years. It's the same people voting. And no matter how much we write about stats or the idea of, you know, these guys are record holders in their way and this is baseball history and it did happen. I'm just doesn't feel like we're at the point where that many ideas and minds are going to change.
And just to repeat, I personally think the Mitchell report was a joke, and then it did not put into context what was going on in baseball. Didn't come close to putting into context. Basically, 86 names were thrown to the to the mob. But the fact is that if you're a writer and you're looking for justification, you can hide behind the fact that these two guys are in the Mitchell report, which I think is something that works against them, unfortunately. All right, Sarah, well, hopefully next week we'll have some resolution where at least baseball is going to try to get back on the field. It's going to be difficult either way, but hopefully that's the context for a conversation next week. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster. Let's hope.
All aboard. It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravitch.
And the Rabbit Train is out working on his lawn today because, of course, there's no baseball going on. Hey, Rabbit, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's exactly what I'm doing. I have my Miracle-Gro. You should see the flowers, Buster, we have here. This looks like an arboretum to walk around. That's how much time we've devoted to lawns, flowers, landscaping. It's never been better. So I would prefer, though, not to be spending so much time on it, actually covering baseball.
Right. It does feel like that all around baseball, in baseball circles, a lawn care competition is broken out in lieu of baseball competition. Because I tell you, every day now I'm looking around, like I just mentioned to you before we started, we haven't had a lot of rain up here in the Northeast in the last few weeks. And I'm looking at some of the dusty bare spots that are beginning to appear in the middle of my lawn. And I'm really concerned about that because I can't worry about Mike Trout and his swing, or I can't worry about the Nationals defending their title.
Take the analogy further. We are all kind of waiting for an act of God, if you will. We are waiting for rain. The players and the owners actually are in control of this. They don't need some divine intervention, and that's the difference between the two. We are waiting on something we don't control, rain. We're also waiting on something that people do control, and that's getting back on a baseball field.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So before we get in, I want to distract us a little bit longer before we get into the whole health and safety protocol and the labor stuff. I'm going to have you answer the questions I just posed to Sarah Lang. Some quick hitters. Hall of Fame chances for Yadier Molina. You vote yes or no?
I vote yes. I think his impact on the game, I think his being the best catcher for a number of years. I think personally we are, with analytics and other things, moving into a period of Hall of Fame voting where, while analytics are an enormous part of it, they will benefit him. But I think we're also going to recognize impact on pitching staff, impact on team, impact on game. And again, we fall back on best player or best player at that position during a time. There's no question. There has been nobody who has done what he has done for his team for the length of time he has done it in that catcher role than him. So I would vote him in.
Yep. As I told Sarah, absolutely, I agree, because I keep on hearing from all of his peers about the impact that he has had on the game, you know, day after day after day. Justin Verlander, 37 years old now. He'll turn 38 next February. Carl, I thought coming into the year with 225 career wins that he had a legitimate shot to get to that number. How much do you think this all affects that?
Dramatically. And, you know, he has sort of made a remarkable comeback. We all recall the injury he had, his stomach and the muscle and the subsequent return to form. But I would look at Verlander in a lot of ways. I do, notwithstanding the off the field challenges that have been self-created by a guy like Curt Schilling. But if Schilling isn't in the Hall of Fame, I'm not certain I put Verlander in the Hall of Fame. And again, I acknowledge when it comes to Hall of Fame voting, and the way it's done, I would be wrong. But if I had a vote, I would base it on that. He would be my guy, as opposed to a comp with like a Jack Morris or somebody. That's how I feel about Verlander.
Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds, they have two more tries to get in the Hall of Fame via the writers. Do you think that they get there?
Well, that, you know, do I think they're going to get in versus would I put them in? You know, there seemed to be a little momentum towards that. Is it enough to get them in? Will they eventually get in through some veterans committee, which seems even more adamant against those that have been accused of using steroids? All good questions. Again, I think I have to reframe it to say, would I put them in? And I would say that those two guys, to me, were Hall of Fame pitchers and hitters, certainly Bonds for the majority of a career prior to his alleged use of steroids, which I don't deny happened. So when I get asked about some of the greatest baseball players I ever saw, I have the ability to articulate to the people asking me, Barry Bonds was one of the best baseball players I ever saw, regardless of steroid use. There was no question about it. So, yes, I think they get in, but that would be if I were voting.
It'll be interesting to see how that conversation evolves, Carl, because I got to believe, and I don't think they're going to get in next year for sure, because 15%, which is about what they have to make up, that's a long way away. But I do think there's going to be a question of, come on, really? In the leading up to the last year when, you know, for example, we had Andy Bennis on the podcast lately, and he said, of course there are guys who use PEDs already in the Hall. And, you know, I know who he's referring to. You know who he's referring to. And I think, you know, that sort of common sense perspective may eventually begin to become part of the deal when we get into their last year on the ballot. All right, let's get into baseball. First, the K2 of the challenge to get baseball back on the field at the moment, health and safety protocol. We saw the fragility of this whole thing with what happened with the camps on Friday. You know, Major League Baseball moving to shut this down after those positive tests in the Philadelphia Phillies complex and other places as well. I talked with a couple of people over the weekend who've seen the health and safety protocol, and Carl, they say they were overwhelmed. And they just think this is going to be too difficult to pull off, even if you get the financial stuff worked out. What do you think?
Well, it certainly is a major hurdle, and it's a legitimate hurdle, and you have every right to be concerned about it. And with protocols in place, you still have every right to be concerned about it. This is an individual thing, and we're trying to fit it in underneath the umbrella of unions representing all players when, as we all know, there are individuals who deal with whether it's compromised immunity, whether it's a family member, whether it's a pregnant spouse, wife, girlfriend, whatever it might be. So it is absolutely a situation that is not easily defined. And yes, the fact that players and front office executives, training staffs, whoever it may be, is testing positive presents huge hurdles. I think in the context of the conversation, Buster, I wish that was the issue that we could deal with solely, because it's not, and you're still, you know, having conversations about finances and et cetera, when forget the elephant in the room. The room really is, to me, the virus, the financial aspect of all of this, and the back and forth BS has taken on a life of its own unnecessarily. COVID-19 is so real and so powerful and so dangerous, it dwarfs these conversations that they got mired in. You know, again, long way to answer your question. It is a huge hurdle. I think it's something that you can move forward even with its presence, but it becomes an enormous challenge. Absolutely.
And it feels like that, especially that, I mean, under the owner's 60-game proposal, everyone would be reporting to some site, Carl, on next Monday, a week from now. And the idea that, you know, you train everybody, you get everybody used to what the protocol is. And I don't mean this as a political conversation, but there's certainly, as we've seen in our country, there are going to be different perspectives on things like wearing masks from different people in different parts of the country. It feels like it's going to be a lot to ram down the throats of everybody. And I'm not talking about, you know, owners to players. I'm just talking about getting the information to people and getting them comfortable with it. For example, the other day when we got those positive tests out of the Phillies camp, you know, folks with other teams were checking on what happened and, you know, how did that pop up? And, you know, the feeling was is that maybe at the Phillies camp, they were kind of loose with it and they weren't absolutely locked down in a way that that everybody would need to be if they're actually going to work through this.
Yes, this is a country in which we have and respect individuals' rights. I think in the situation of of work conditions and environments, the fallback is the Korean example. I mean, I know there are 10 teams. We have 30. I understand all of that. They have been able to now negotiate through, you know, the first quarter of their season without a case. Now, if you're able to implement the types of restrictions that they put on players, those that are at the ballpark, those that these players are exposed to, if you're able to limit it and have it be accepted, which is a whole different conversation in this country than it is in Korea, you know, they have done it. It can be done, whether you're comfortable with it, whether you're willing to accept it. It has been done on a one-third scale, meaning 10 teams versus 30. There are ways to do it. Whether we are willing to accept those, whether the players are willing to abide by them, that's another question. But it can be done. And that's the blessing and the curse. We've seen it. It works. But we're not willing to accept it. So, that's going to be the question. How do individuals and teams deal with it? Or can the players and the owners come up with policies which everybody has to adhere to, which are going to be far stricter than anybody is used to or likely want to deal with?
Well, and I think the perspective of all the players and the staffers have to take is if, in fact, they get this off the ground and they attempt to make this happen, they have to look at it as, you know what, I may not believe in X, Y, or Z. I might not believe the effect of the virus is as serious as what's being portrayed. You know, there's some players who are going to have that perspective, but they have to say, but I'm going to defer. You know what? If other people feel that way, then I need to defer that to their beliefs and what they feel makes them more safe, and I have to contribute in the way that these protocols are laid out, because that's the only way it would work.
Or don't play. Yeah, or don't play. I mean, that, you know, you have to, and it may very well go against the grain of your, whether it's a religious belief, a political belief, whatever it is that's causing you not to want to adhere to a guideline. Your two choices are you adhere or you don't play. And that is a choice, and it's a legitimate choice. And we've all been around people who have reactions to this, which are way what appear to be overboard. And then there are those that appear to be way lax in it. And where you fall on that spectrum, that's a very individual thing. But when it comes to work conditions, the only way this works is that you respect other people almost as much, if not more, than you respect your own opinion. That's what I tell my kids. You know, wearing of masks, et cetera, that you're seeing other people do is less about you, and it's more about the other people. You've got to respect the other people. And this is one of those, for me personally, you've got to respect everybody's reaction to it. However, there are ways to protect everybody, and that should be the principle from which we operate. How do we protect everybody, irregardless of our own individual opinion? And in a sport, that has to be the leading principle.
All right. We won't even get to the health and safety protocol if the two sides can't scale the Mount Everest. The agreement on the financial stuff, we're expecting to hear later today the results of the players' vote on the owner's 60-game proposal. Jesse Rogers has reported, it's the same thing I've been hearing, that it's very likely that the players are going to turn down the owner's 60-game proposal. Carl, what's your take on where we stand with that?
Well, my take is that it's been now reduced to two things. One, the players are hedging a bet. They are hedging a bet that they are going to win a grievance. To me, they're choosing a grievance over what once was a demand of theirs, full pro rata pay. They have got that. They've got the 100% of their pro rata pay. They have a season that's currently 60 games. They've had this proposal to look at, vote on for about a week. If they were sincere in their effort to play more games, to me, the bottom line point that they wanted was as many games and full pay. They got the full pay. They could have come back and said, okay, we're good with full play, 65 games. But we've been kind of stuck here for about a week on this proposal, and they have the ability to vote on it, send something back. They never did. So the idea that they want to play more games, again, I think we talked about this. It seemed like there were pillars in each camp. The pillar for the owners, we're not playing into November because the health experts are telling us there's a fear of COVID. Every fear of COVID was realized in the last 48 to 72 hours. It seems very legitimate to say we're starting and we're stopping. Seems legitimate to just this person, to me. also seemed legitimate for the players to say, we want 100% of our salary. We seem to be able to check those two boxes, and yet we're still stuck spinning our wheels. So grievance can yield you $1 billion, billion plus. It can lose you the designated hitter and a chance to benefit from expanded playoffs. That's where I think we're at. I think the players should have responded sooner. I think that they're hedging their bet that we're just going to go get a grievance. He's going to mandate X amount of games, and we'll, again, because it always ends up here, we'll see you in court. To me, Major League Baseball collects grievances like, you know, people used to collect stamps. There's a lot of them against them. I don't know when the hell they're going to hear a grievance on this. Likely not until there's a 2021 CBA negotiation, which will involve that. So all those questions are in play. But I think if you reduce it to one thing, it's that. It's that these players are being led to have to debate between grievance or playing 60 something games and getting full pay.
All right, let's play mediator. I'm going to step in and I'm going to appoint myself mediator of this. And this is what I'd say to the two sides, Carl. I'd say to the owners, yes, we hear you when you now say, boy, we can't go beyond 60 games because look at the calendar. My God, we don't have any days left. We have to get off the board by September 27th. I would say to the owners, you have lost the right to make that argument because you drag this out for 6 weeks. You can't sit here now and say, oops, we can't go to 65 or 66 because of that. Please, you must extend yourself in some way financially. And if that means offering as a good faith gesture 105% of pro rata, then do it. If you want to stick to 60 games, please offer a little bit more money to try to get yourself in the middle ground. And what I would say to the players is stop moving the goalpost. You know, Tony Clark and Rob Manfred had a meeting last week. They had a handshake. They thought they had some things in place. And all of a sudden, all these little extras were added on the player side. And at one point, I think the, you know, Major League Baseball has suggested the formation of a committee so the two sides can really begin to talk as they move forward. And both sides, you have to make a deal. I personally think that baseball is going to be derailed by the coronavirus this year. I don't think they're going to be able to pull it off. But the two sides, Carl, they have to have a peace. They have to work out a deal, shake hands, and at least have that image moving forward, I think, for the good of baseball. If you were mediator, what would you tell the two sides?
Well, I agree with you on stop moving the goalposts. The where and when was answered. 60 games, full pay, and then that became, nah, not exactly where and when. We now need to add some things. That's troubling. Part of this, Buster, feels like there's some new folks in the room who are pitching for a fight, and that's what we got. And I think their end game is a grievance. Their end game is to try to win billions. Their end game is to try to have access to the finances of the teams. I think that's where they would like to see this thing end up. I find it hard to believe there's a genuineness in an organization that says where and when, and then when they are literally told 60 games, full pay, the where and when wasn't exactly what we wanted. And look, I don't. My horse in this race is the game, like you. I care about baseball. I'm not particularly aligned with one of the sides, but it does at least the where and when seem to gain momentum, and the players kind of had, I thought, some public opinion in their corner. And then when they were told, all right, where and when is 60 games, you know, we're going to start on the 19th and we're going to go till October and have expanded playoffs. I don't know what happened. So now I feel like it's gone back to the commissioner, who appears to really, I don't know. If I were him, I'd be kind of cranky. I have tried to make deals. It does feel like one side is attempting to make a deal. Whether the other side likes the deal is different, but one side appears to be trying to make a deal. I don't think he wants to mandate. I think that's clear. I don't think he's comfortable with the mandate thing. So that part's very frustrating. Get in the room, try to get to 62 games, and let's move on. I mean, we're at the finish line. You know, dictate the deal. Here it is, guys. And the end, my mediation is, look, 24 hours from now, I'm telling him to mandate the number of games and having you guys report. That's what I'm doing. you know, once we get and assuming the health and safety are agreed on, go ahead, bud. We've tried long enough. This game is over. At some point, the game ends.
And it does feel like we're certainly nearing the finish line with what's going on here. All right, Carl.
We better be.
Thank you.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Monday. And real quick before we get started with these, if you can't get enough talk about the never-ending back and forth between players in Major League Baseball, you are in luck. Jeff Passan makes an appearance on today's edition of ESPN Daily. You can find that wherever you get your podcasts, and based on all the tweets that we're reading, I'm sure many of you will be listening to that. Let's dive into the tweets. Brian Pickle-Nicky writes in, watching the Griffey documentary last night for the first time in months, I truly missed baseball. All the labor posturing has made me callous. Leave it to the kid to remind me why I love baseball. I need it back now. Who else played or plays with such joy like Ken Griffey Jr.?
Boy, a lot of guys. I could give you, like, most players love to play. Most players have a great time. You know, Mike Trout, I think part of the reason why he appeals to other players is because he has so much fun. Francisco Lindor has got the biggest smile in baseball. You know, on Players Weekend, when the nickname's in the back of the jerseys, he's Mr. Smile. Derek Jeter played with that kind of joy. I could go on and on. You know, Tony Gwynn obviously comes to mind. Coming out early in the afternoon, taking early batting practice, laughing as he did that and having fun. I think a lot of players do.
And to wrap up Bleacher Tweets today, I'm going to combine a pair of all-star Bleacher Tweeters tweets here. Debbie Gammons Brown writes in, I'm guessing the outbreak of COVID-19 at Phillies camp is strike three on the 2020 MLB season. Is there any hope left? And then Amy Chapman, she chimed in on that, basically saying, seeing this information makes me wonder, have either side in the baseball negotiations addressed COVID protocols? You've said throughout today's podcast and, you know, before that you think COVID-19 is going to derail this whole thing. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and they have been talking about them. I talked to one person specifically who over the weekend saw a copy of the protocol for the first time. And Taylor, he was worn out. Like he said, he had to stop reading because it's so detailed and there's so many things that have to be followed. It could turn out to be overwhelming and it could turn out to be impossible. I do think it's important that they at least get a deal in place, an agreement in place to have that be the final image
right.
of baseball. You know, we'll see. But I think there's a legitimate question as to whether or not the coronavirus just takes down baseball in 2020 once and for all.
Ravi's right. They're doing it other places. They're doing it in the Premier League. They're doing it all over Europe with soccer, with, you know, pretty big leagues, too. So, well, hopefully they can get it all ironed out. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And, Buster, let's talk a little bit about what our plan is going forward. You have kind of some specific guidelines on how you want to handle the show if we do one tomorrow. Why don't you lay it out?
Yeah. So what we're going to do is that we're going to react to actual hard crossroads. In other words, we've heard from so many of our Bleacher tweeters, they're kind of sick of the labor talk. And I agree, which is why, you know, from mid-March when we had the shutdown, we went into storytelling mode and we had so many people on, you know, to help us with that and to tell stories. But we're kind of at a point now where the negotiations are going on and we're waiting to see the direction of baseball. And I really don't want to talk about the negotiations in this incremental sense when there's not resolution. So if we have resolution, if Rob Manfred comes down with a mandate and says, yes, we're going to plow ahead 54 game season, 60 game season, whatever. Or if the players say, yes, we agree to terms, that's when we'll have another podcast so that we can talk about that. And hopefully that'll be tomorrow. I suspect it's probably more likely that it's going to be on Wednesday, but that's the next time we'll be talking on the podcast, Taylor.
Sounds good, Buster. Thanks for listening, everyone. We will see you soon.
That's it for today. My thanks to Sarah, to Carl, to Taylor. Stay safe, everybody. And remember, hate and inequality based on race is something we need to fight every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.